WPFW, Washington.
Good evening, Washington, D.C., and America, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. Join the fray as we broadcast live from the golden studios of WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. Join Terry, Mark, and Garland as they boldly go where no commentators have gone before to inform, even save the nation with wit, wisdom, and sagacity on the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine, sitting here with... Hello? Garland? Terry? Where are you? Terry, are you under the table again? No, wait. No, he's not here. I'm alone tonight. Neither Garland nor Terry have shown up. Actually, I neither can be here tonight, so I am alone. If I were Al Haig, I would say I'm in charge here and manage to, I don't know, run the country into the ground. I am alone tonight. There is no caucus. However, I can still be plenty raucous by myself, I assure you. And listen, I've always felt the Raucous Caucus as bigger than Terry Garland and me anyway. It's not, we're not the only people in the caucus. You folks who call in every week, every Tuesday at 7, you are part of the caucus. Those of you that visit us at Ben's, you are part of the caucus. We all know you're certainly very raucous. And those of you that are going to visit us next week are part of the caucus. Because next week, yes, all three of us will be back. Terry Garland and me, Mark Levine, right here on WPFW 89.3 FM Tuesday at 7. But also live at Bus Boys and Poets. That's in Hyattsville, Maryland, not the one in D.C., the one in Hyattsville, Maryland. So a lot of our suburban Maryland listeners can check us out. Frankly, it's right close to the border. If you live in D.C., it's not far at all. Come visit us. Come see us live. That's next Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. For a live edition of the Raucous Caucus. We will all three be there to then. For now, though, you just got me alone. But as I said, you are part of the caucus, and I'm going to encourage you folks to call in 202-588-0893 and join the raucosity. I will need your wit, wisdom, and sagacity since, let's face it, I'm here alone, and it's awfully lonesome without you. Tonight, I do not want to talk about the Florida primary. That's right. Everybody else is talking about the Florida primary. Besides, we don't know the results yet. You'll see it on the news later tonight. We deal with domestic issues all the time on the Raucous Caucus, and they're important. Obviously, they're the most important. This is our country. We care about the economy. We care about jobs. We care about what's going on in the government. But I think it's time to look outside the United States. Week after week, we call in, we're talking about some tax cut or some environmental issue or some civil rights issue or just the Republicans being Republicans. And we'll have callers and they call in and they want to talk about Ethiopia or they want to talk about Haiti. And we always have to say to them, I'm sorry, that's off topic. Well, tonight it's on topic. And while I can't claim to understand the internal workings of every one of the 200 or so nations on the planet, ask me about Benin and all I know is it's next to Togo. I really don't know what goes on there. I admit it. I don't. But I do know a lot about what's going on in the world, and I think we see a phenomenon, an amazing phenomenon that's growing. Some would call it, I actually think the best name for it is the Facebook revolution. Because young people, it's mostly young people, in countries all over the planet, are connecting together through social media, Facebook and Twitter, and overthrowing dictators all over the globe. Some call it the Arab Spring. It's certainly true in the Arab world. It's certainly true in Tunisia and Libya and Egypt and Yemen and Bahrain. And now Syria, I think, is the next to fall. I do not think that it's going to be long for Assad to be in power the way he's massacring his people. The civil war is beginning, and I hope the people succeed. It's also, frankly, in Lebanon. The Cedar Revolution began all this 5 years ago. But it's beyond the Arab world, and it's beyond just last spring. In the Middle East, we have Iran, the Green Revolution, which happened 2 years ago. Outside of Iran, right now in Russia. Yes, Russia, our old communist enemy, is now fighting for its own democratic freedoms against its dictator, Vladimir Putin. The people are coming to the streets trying to defend their democracy. It is all over the globe. And it's also in Africa. We don't talk enough about Africa. Certainly the mainstream media doesn't talk enough about it. I know WPFW hosts do. But in Africa, people are fighting against dictators in Senegal, in Mali. We know that there are successful cases. For example, the brutal dictator of Liberia is gone, and now there is a freely elected government. So what I want to talk about tonight, and I want you to call in and tell me where I'm wrong or where I'm right. You can agree with me. It's allowed, even when I'm here by myself. But hey, if you didn't disagree with me, I wouldn't feel at home. I'm so used to Garland and Terry handing me my head that I kind of expected from you. So that's okay, too. But what I want to discuss is this flowering of democracy all around the world. Because some people, I think, see it as a bad thing. And some question whether the United States should be helping these movements at all. As far as I'm concerned, as a liberal, as a progressive, as someone who does not like dictators and tyranny, I welcome it. I welcome people uprising all around the globe. I think it's great when people overthrow their dictators. Yes, it can be bloody. Yes, it can be deadly. But when people are fighting for their own freedom, for human rights, I think that's a good thing. Now, I'd be the first to tell you that these revolutions are fraught. All you have to do is look at world history. Look at the French Revolution, right? Began against the divine right of kings and ended up with the guillotines and the Reign of Terror. We can talk about any number of revolutions, some of which succeeded, becoming very successful, peaceful countries. Look at, for example, the Czech Republic today, or other countries where revolutions have just meant a chance for some party to take its own power and become its own dictatorship and take over its own people and to really have their own abuses. What I find interesting, though, is that liberals, I think, for the most part, well into the 80s and 90s, were very much on the side of the people. Some of us wanted to intervene to help them. Some of us did not want to intervene to help them. There was always a disagreement among progressives about when the United States should intervene. Many on the left are very fearful of the United States intervening because, let's face it, the U.S. often does so for the wrong reasons. Not necessarily to help people be free, but to get oil or to get products from Latin America or to get who knows what. So I think sometimes our motives are suspect. But in general, when it comes to helping people be free, if we can do so at relatively little cost to America, I think it's a good thing. I, for example, supported our intervention in Libya. Some on the left did not. I know Terry was very suspicious of it, though, you know, now that it's been successful, he's kind of come around. All three of us, Terry Garland and I, very much opposed the war in Iraq. Not because Saddam Hussein wasn't a dictator, he certainly was, but because the people at that time weren't fighting to overthrow that dictator. They weren't in the streets. They weren't doing what they're very bravely doing in Syria, standing up against their dictator, risking death, going out there peacefully and trying to change their country and getting mowed down, which, is, as I said, is exactly what's going on in Syria today. It was what was going on in Libya. It was what was going on in Egypt. And Bahrain, for that matter. It doesn't matter whether the country is an ally of the United States or an enemy of the United States, as far as I'm concerned. That's the individual policies of one person, one man. Because I don't know of any female dictators. There must have been a few at some point. I don't think even Evita Peron was in charge. They're usually men, so I'll use the male here. The dictator, whatever his policy is, whether it supports the United States or opposes it, as far as I'm concerned, if the people of that country don't have the right to speak out against their government without being rounded up and carted away, that's a dictatorship. And, of course, we can talk about this country where, you know, money controls politics and all that stuff and the lack of freedoms in this country, Occupy movement being kicked out of the park. But actually, I don't want to go there today. We talk about that all the time, Carl and Terry and I. We talk about money in politics. We talk about the corrosive influence of corporations. Let's leave that aside for now. For now, that's off topic. I want to talk about what's going on all around the world. Although whether or not the United States should intervene, I think, is a fair question. One thing I want to do, though, is I want to focus a little bit on what's going on in Africa, because this isn't an area that we often discuss on the Rockets Caucus. Frankly, it's not an area that's discussed much around the globe. I'm going to bring a guest on who knows a lot more about Africa than I do. His name is Bokar Ba, and he is the president of New African Visions. He's Senegalese, and we're going to start with what's going on in Senegal, but then we're going to focus on some other countries in Africa, because I think this is a worldwide phenomenon. I don't think this is an Arab Spring. I think this is a human spring. That's not to pick on the Arabs. I think it's great what they're doing in Arab countries, what they're doing in Iran, what they're doing in Russia, what they're doing in Africa. Anytime people stand up and very, very bravely, very courageously oppose dictators and try to fight for freedom, I think it's a very brave thing to do. It's a very scary thing to do, and sometimes it's the wrong thing to do. I mean, sometimes people get mowed down. We know that as much as we may care about the people of Tibet, China is a very powerful country, and there's no way that the people of Tibet will ever get their freedom unless China becomes a democracy, which is kind of unlikely. Because they've conquered Tibet, and Tibet's not going to get any freedom. So I'm not saying the United States should be out there with troops saving all these countries. But sometimes I think that when you talk about these issues, freedom and democracy, really what I consider to be liberal issues, progressive issues, I think that because of the Bush administration, it's kind of given freedom and democracy a bad name. Remember why they took us to war in Iraq. We know why they went. They went because of oil. We know, of course, they divvied up the oil fields a week after Bush was in office. But they sold it to us as about weapons of mass destruction, right? They might come and kill us. And they sold it to us as some connection to Al-Qaeda, which, of course, there was no connection to Al-Qaeda. But when that failed, when it was proven beyond any doubt that there was no connection between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, well, it was proven beyond any doubt that Iraq didn't have weapons of mass destruction. They backed into the third reason, which actually I think is somewhat, sometimes justified. You may disagree with me. That's why you're going to call in and you're going to let me know. But they backed into the idea, well, we're helping the Iraqi people achieve freedom and democracy. And because Bush used that excuse, and I think it was an excuse, I think it was a false excuse. I told you that the reason was oil. That was the main thing. And that, the weapons of mass destruction, that was the second excuse. And the connection to Al-Qaeda, that was the third excuse. And they backed into democracy and freedom. But because the Bush administration used that excuse, some on the left, I think that we should never use America's aid to help people who are fighting their dictators. Because Bush did it, and it was wrong when Bush did it. Therefore, it's always wrong. And if that's your view, call in, tell it to me, but I disagree with you. At 202-588-0893, as far as I'm concerned, it is proper for the United States to aid people who are fighting for their freedom. Now, it doesn't always have to be militarily. There are all kinds of aid. Actually, I kind of like the way we did in Libya. Let the people fight their own battles with a little bit of fighting from the air. Sometimes it can be we can use sanctions, as we're using in Iran, as we use very successfully against South Africa. Sometimes it does require force. Sometimes, as with the Tibetan people, it just requires, meeting the Dalai Lama and saying we support your cause and really doing nothing because there's not much we can do against China. So I'm not saying we have to have the same response in every way, whether it's military or economic or whatever. But I think that America should always be on the side of freedom. I now do want to talk about what's going on in Africa. And I want to go to my guest first, to Bokar Ba, if I can. Because I want to hear from him. There was some brutality that just happened in Senegal recently, and he, of course, is from Senegal. And I'd like him to share with us what's going on there. And then I'll take your calls at 202-588-0893. Bokar, do we have you?
Hey, Mark, I really thank you to have me on this show.
I'm very glad that you're here. Now, you're the president of New African Vision, right?
Yes, I'm the president of African New Vision, which is basically an organization established here in Washington, D.C., which tries to promote the democracy and ethics and good governance and basically everything that can help the continent to move forward and also help the new generation to understand that only African can help the continent African to go forward.
Now, you are from Senegal. Tell me what's going on in your home country right now.
What's going on, actually, the fact is we have elected a president, Abdoulaye Wade. His name is Abdoulaye Wade. He was democratically elected. I can say that we were among the first African nation to democratically elect a president in year 2000. When he came in year 2000 for a mandate for a term of 5 years, the second term he modified to 7 years. And then he had his two terms, and then what he's trying to do is during his two terms of 12 years, he modified the constitution to have a foot them.
You know, this is very interesting to me, Bokar, because it doesn't just happen in Senegal. There are some people who think, well, a democracy, that's an election. You have a free election, and you don't fix the election, and then you have democracy. But I've always said the way to have a democracy is not the first election, it's the second election. Too many people come into power legally, and they come there by a free election, but then they do exactly what you're talking about. They change the rules so that you can't have a second free election.
Exactly, exactly. That's exactly what happened. What happened is when they came together in 2000, he basically, anybody who helped him, because anybody who helped him get rid of those people. And now what's happening, he has 2 terms, he bought almost all the members of the leading the constitution, mm-hmm. meaning the group managing the constitution.
So the people in charge of changing the constitution, he bought them off.
Yes. So he bought them, and then those guys allow him to have a third term. But the reality is, the president Abdoulaye Wade, he wants to put his son in power.
That seems to happen a lot, too. That happened in North Korea. That happened, it tried to happen in Egypt. That tried to happen in Libya. That's the other thing that seems to happen a lot. It happened in Syria.
But how he's gonna do run for election? Because he's gonna have to do a campaign. But right now, at this moment, the country is everybody is to that.
Everyone is what?
Everybody is to that, and people are fighting over there. We cannot have an election. Supposed to start the election on the 5th, in the next 2 or 3 days.
Yes, on the 5th of February.
So
that's,
how are you going to do the election Sunday. Like that?
Well,
so
and I understand
Senegal
they're just... go ahead.
Senegal is not a country where you can, like in North Korea, where you can come and say, okay, I put my son. No, because people fought and did everything possible, were united behind this president.
So,
he was behind this president to eject the other one. Now, the other one is gone. Now, he thinks that he can modify the constitution. He tried. Because when he's going to leave the power, because he's 85 years old, minimum. Some people say he's 87 mm-hmm. or even more. How can you imagine a person of 80, who is 87 years old, trying to run for another third term?
Yeah.
How can it be possible? It's impossible. And the people are not going to let him do that.
Well, tell me what's happening, because the people of Senegal, like people all over the globe and all the other countries I've mentioned, they've been protesting in the streets and there's been some violence, right?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
What happened is what all the civil society is organized. Civil society is organized. He tried first, before we get to this point, he tried to modify the constitution so that he can have a president and a vice president. And he was going to appoint his son as a vice president.
Nice.
Then the country stood up. That night, he was ready to take his plane and run away. So the country stood up. He back off. He said, okay.
When you say stood up, they filled the streets. They went on strike. Hundreds of thousands of people.
They went to the street and they were ready to go to the palace and eject him out. And that's what the people are trying to do right now.
So
one of the greatest leaders, some people are dying, one of the greatest leaders who is, like I was saying, we have organized all in a group. We call it M23. The M23 is a gathering of all the political parties and all the civil movement in social societies in Senegal. So that means in the month of June 23rd, people were united to prevent the modification of the constitution to have a president and a vice president, mainly his son.
So I suspect that he has a military that is loyal to him. And much again, I think Senegal is very typical of dictatorships. And the people are standing up in the street, and there's been some violence, right?
Yes, exactly. That's what they're trying to do. They're recruiting. He has his milice. He's recruiting young people, because obviously no one is working. If you go there and say you recruit some new people, you give them a uniform, and they're going to work for you. And those are the people who are shooting on, actually, who are trying to maintain him on power. But no matter what, he's finished, because I don't see what you can do at 85 to 87 years old.
So where does it where does this end? Do you think the people will succeed in overthrowing this? Well, now he's a dictator. He may have been elected originally.
Actually, I can't be at that level. The only thing I know today, up to here, we are organized and will be at the State Department on Monday. We'll be at the embassy on Monday, and we'll be at the White House to show our frustration and tell them.
Well, that brings me to my next point, though. You're going to the State Department, the embassy, and the White House. What would you like the United States of America to do? What would you like President Obama to do? You're going to American institutions of power. What can Americans do to help you in Senegal?
Because you know what? America was one of the best friend of Senegal. President George Bush, he came there many times. And I think twice. And
he's then, not well-loved on this radio show, though.
But when this guy came, when Barack Obama came, he understood that this guy is... He did everything to meet Barack Obama in any instances. But
he did everything. He tried to help Barack Obama.
Yeah, because we had our letters, we protesting, etc. It looks like Barack Obama understood clearly what's going on in Senegal.
What do you want the United States to do specifically? What would you ask Obama to do?
The United States already, by his Congress, took a position telling Abdullah Wad, you cannot have a third term.
So President Obama has already said that. Because this doesn't get much news, so we don't even hear what's going on in Senegal. We frankly, it's not on our news at all. So we don't even hear. We hear about Iran. We hear about Libya. We don't hear about Senegal. So President Obama said very clearly that this president, this dictator, has to go.
He didn't say it, but some Congress people said. But that's why we're going to go there on Monday, try to have them by himself a statement.
So that's what you want. You want the president to give a very clear signal that this man has to leave power.
Exactly. Thank you. And thank you for, because what you're doing is extremely important, because we used to be in the French media only, because you remember Senegal is a French-speaking country,
right,
colonized by the French.
Right.
So everything basically is done in French.
That's another thing that's silly, that this idea that we can't cover countries that don't speak our language. That's very, very provincial, to use a French word. Let me ask you, because I know you don't just talk about Senegal. You talk about other countries in Africa. You mentioned there's something going on in Mali, and I fully admit I don't know what's going on in Mali. Tell me what's going on.
No, what happened in Mali is before that they have dictatorship, but since 1991 they had some up and down, but looks like that country is democratically is an example.
Okay, so that's a successful example. The successful example that I was thinking of was Liberia, where you had some of the worst atrocities ever. You had Charles Taylor. He had the Children's Army, where he would kill their parents and force the kids into this horrific army. And of course, he was overturned largely because of the women of Liberia. And now you have a democratically elected female president of Liberia who just got the Nobel Peace Prize. So I guess to me, the lesson of Liberia and Mali is that not only is democracy possible in Africa, it's very successful sometimes that these revolutions do succeed. I think sometimes we only hear the bad news. We only hear about the shootings and the dictators, and we don't focus on the successful transitions Africa from dictatorship to democracy.
Thank you. But what I want to add, you said it, we don't focus usually on the nice thing in Africa. But look, think about it. Africa, people say there is no democracy in Africa, but Africa really, truly is a democratic. We have democracy before there. We had even women, because remember when they elected Ellen Johnson, at that time in France, they were trying to have a woman over there, right? She didn't succeed. France was not ready to elect a woman. Here in America, what's her name? Hillary Clinton was trying to be a president.
She came close.
America was not ready to elect a woman, but Africa did it. Mm-hmm. So we gave a lesson to the whole world, saying that we elected a president as a woman, among basically before anybody else. That's an example. That's a nice example of democracy.
Right.
And he's been taking the country from war, and she's working hardly with all the institutions trying to stabilize this country, and to the point where she got the Nobel Prize.
Right.
This is wonderful.
Right, in Liberia. It is. And she's a wonderful woman. I've heard her speak, and she talks about how the women really just stopped supporting all their husbands fighting and killing each other, and really the women took back that country. So it is a terrific example, really a worldwide example. Bokar, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate you giving this perspective from Senegal, because it's a country that we almost never talk about in the U.S. media, and I really appreciate
your
time.
What I want to add is Senegal was the first country in the West African region to democratically elect someone.
And you want to retain that democracy now.
And we want to retain that democracy.
Fair
we
enough.
Never have violence in Senegal.
Is there anything that listeners can do?
The Christian and the Muslim, they live together. But this president, he's going to try to do everything, even to divide the Muslim between them. We're not going to let that happen. The Senegal is a whole and united. We respect the Christian. The Christians celebrate the Christian holidays more than the Muslim celebrate the Christian holidays more than the Christian. It's a one family.
It is. By the way, I do know some people who lived in Senegal, not now, but did a few years back, and they said it's a very peaceful, very pleasant country.
Yes.
So it's a shame to see this man trying to become dictator. Let me ask you this: what can listeners do to help you? Call their member of Congress. Call the State Department. Ask President Obama to support democracy in Senegal. Would that help?
Yeah, that would help.
Okay.
That would help. If we can do anything to have a statement from Barack Obama himself, that would be excellent.
I agree with you, and I think he's been slow on some of these democracy movements, frankly. On Iran, on Syria, even on Egypt, he was a little bit slow, but he's coming. He said he's spoken on Egypt just in time, on Libya, on Syria, and I hope he does so in Senegal as well. Thank you so much for your call, Bokar. Thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. You've heard from Bokar. Now I want to hear from you. You can talk about any country in the world, 202-588-0893. But the focus is on mostly countries where the people are trying to overturn a dictator, and whether you think the United States should get involved or maybe you think we shouldn't get involved. I want to hear from you. Next caller is someone who calls in all the time. He always wants to talk about Ethiopia and Tesfa. I always have to tell you, I'm sorry, Ethiopia is off topic. Well, tonight it is on topic. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So tell me, what is going on there?
What's going on is exactly what's happening. It looks like what's happening in Syria.
Okay.
In Syria, we have a dictator who divides Syrians along sectarian lines.
Right. He represents a minority, the Alawites, and they take power over the majority, and they're so afraid that they'll be picked on by the majority that they support this dictator. That's exactly what happens.
Exactly. He tells the Alawites, if he is gone, they are finished.
Right. That's right. And they think they're fighting for their lives, and who knows, maybe they are. But at the same time, that's what allows the dictatorship to exist. Is something similar like that going on in Ethiopia?
In exactly the same thing. There, it's ethnicity.
What is the ethnicity of Ethiopia?
The ethnicity of Ethiopia is like over 80 ethnic groups.
Wow.
Ethiopia has been a country in biblical times.
Sure.
Actually, we had a common queen called Sheba.
Queen Sheba, that's right. Queen Sheba.
We had another queen when Jesus was on this earth, Candace. 120 years ago, we had another queen called Zodito. And we had lots and lots of history. Ethiopia has been a historic country, I think, before anybody else.
But Ethiopia's had a lot of trouble in the last 100 years. A lot of famine, a lot of fighting. There's, of course, the war with Eritrea that killed so many people. What's going on right now in Ethiopia?
Right now, we have a divisive prime minister, exactly like the Syrian one. The Tigray people, he says he represents them, and they are saying he does not. There are lots of people from Tigray who does not accept him and who oppose him, who are with the opposition, including the defense minister under the current prime minister.
So now, was he elected into government? Is this someone who's what's the political system in Ethiopia? I don't know. I admit it.
The political system under the current prime minister is based on ethnicity.
But was he elected, this prime minister?
No, he is not. He took power through guns. He was a rebel. He overthrew the former government.
I see.
And took power. Since then, he has. He is saying he has held so many elections, but all of them were fraud.
Fraudulent elections. So are the people in Ethiopia, in Addis Ababa, are they going out in the capital city and marching in the streets like they are in Syria and Libya and Egypt and these other countries? Or are they afraid? What's going on there?
There was an election in 2005. People rose up and they were cut with machine guns with a targeting device. And he arrested over 30,000 people, and there are still over 10,000 political prisoners right now. But he divided the country along ethnic lines, just like the Syrian one. He is using ethnicity to divide the people, but people are resisting. We are still resisting. There are political opposition groups, but their leaders are arrested one after another, and there is so much killing. But it's hidden. Why? Because the United States wants this guy to stay in power.
Now, Tesla, I want to take a break here because I want you to stay on the air. I got to just take a break on the half hour. When we come back, I want you to tell me specifically why the United States wants this guy in power and what we, the American people, can do to help the people of Ethiopia. Folks, if you want to call in, it's 202-588-0893. This is the Raucous Caucus. I'm alone tonight. It's Mark Levine. I'm being raucous by myself without Garland and Terry, but I have you, my callers, to help be raucous with me. Come join the caucus. We'll be right back after this.
What does support of WPFW mean to you? Preservation of America's classical music, jazz, and all its extensions. Alternative news, views, and analysis not covered in mainstream media. Holistic health shows that explore a natural approach to medicine. Why do you support WPFW? Here's the answer in a nutshell. We contribute and you contribute. We contribute to your life and your community with programs that inform and entertain every day. That's our contribution. Visit us online at WPFW.org right now with yours, or simply call the membership hotline at 202-588-0999, extension 344. That's 202-588-0999, extension 344. Thanks.
Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine. I am flying solo tonight. Garland and Terry have it deigned to show up right here in WPFW Studios. They've got other things to do tonight. I'm sure they'll tell you it's important when they come back next week. Next week we're all going to be together, and we're going to be out at Bus Boys and Poets. Come see us. It's going to be the one in Hyattsville, Maryland. And we'd love to see you. Many of you have come and visited us at Ben's. Come visit us at Bus Boys and Poets at Hyattsville, Maryland. That's next Tuesday, 7 to 8 p.m. I assure you, barring some medical emergency, Garland, Terry, and I will all be there. We'll be back to fighting and backbiting and all those things you love us to do and making fun of each other. I guarantee you, we will be back next week. You won't want to miss that. Obviously, you can tune in, 89.3 FM, Tuesday at 7. But also come visit us. It's not that far. It's just across the border. If you live in suburban Maryland, is close. If you live in D.C., it's not that far. Come see us. We'd love to see you. We'd love to talk to you. Do we still have Tesla on the line? Tesla, yes, you're still there. Tell me this. You were talking about the American role. Now, you're saying the American government supports this prime minister. Is that the Obama government, the Bush government, both American governments supported this guy?
Both.
Tell me why.
Because they say they will use him in the war against terror.
Ah, but that's often our excuse. That's why we supported the Yemeni dictator. That's why we support the Bahraini dictator. That's frankly, Mubarak of Egypt was a dictator we supported because he helped him. So he's against Al Qaeda, so we like him. That's the deal.
But do you know what he does?
Tell me.
He went into Somalia.
Okay.
Al-Shabaab got stronger and took over the whole country of Somalia.
Shabaab is the radical terrorist group in Somalia, right? That's
in
controlling
Somalia.
The country. Although Somalia is a mess. I mean, it's a bunch of, they don't control all the country. It's a number of different militias. It's probably the least safe country in the world right now. But go ahead.
About 2 or 3 years ago, he was the Ethiopian soldiers were in Somalia. Actually, the Al-Shabaab got the solidarity of all Somalis, and it threw out the Ethiopian soldiers out of their country, and they got much stronger.
So, Tesla, let me ask you. I want to ask you the same question I asked Bokar Ba. What do you want America to do? You want President Obama to say this guy has to go, that there has to be a fair election in Ethiopia where all the people can vote for a leader? Is that what you want?
What I want is simply our prime minister is a genocidaire. Genocide Watch here in Arlington has enough evidence against the current prime minister.
Because he's killed so many thousands of people.
Human Rights Watch has enough evidence against the current prime minister in Ethiopia. Amnesty International has taken so many photos, aerial photos where the prime minister ordered the burning of villages all over Ethiopia. This prime minister has to face justice. That's what I want. Also,
has the International Court of Justice at The Hague, have they indicted him? Are they thinking of indicting him? They did that, of course, in Bosnia and in Kosovo. Is he being tried for war crimes? They did that for the Sudanese president who killed so many people in Darfur.
This is America's bad dictator. America doesn't want him to face justice.
Ah, okay. All right.
If America opposes the dictator in Syria, it should oppose the dictator in Ethiopia
I agree with you. And I appreciate your call. And for once, I could talk about Ethiopia tonight. So I'm very glad you called in, Tesla. Thank you so much for calling in. Again, any country in the world is fair game. And I want to know what's going on there. Some of the countries I do know what's going on. I know what's going on in Syria. But frankly, all these African countries I really appreciate because we don't hear these things in the mainstream media. You open up the Washington Post. I read it pretty much every day, and I don't hear about Senegal, and I don't hear about Ethiopia. So that's why, call in and let us know what's going on and what we can do, because, you know, when we're done, pick up the phone, call the State Department, call Obama, and say, you know, I heard about this on WPFW, I heard on the Raucous Caucus, I'm not Ethiopian, I'm not a Senegalese, but I do believe in democracy and freedom around the world, and I also believe in a consistent foreign policy. There are some that say, well, the president should support a dictator if it's pro-American. And there's some on the left, and I find this even weirder, who say the president should support dictators that are anti-American. I've heard people say, well, you know, we can't support the people of Libya because, you know, the government was you know, in bed with America or against America or Syria. As far as I'm concerned, if a dictator is mistreating its own people, torturing, killing, not allowing the people to freely speak, that person should go. We should be consistent. I'm not saying we can militarily overturn every dictator. I know we're not going to overturn China. We're not going to overturn North Korea. But at the same time, to me, the legitimacy of a government is based on it being chosen by the people. Heck, that's why I wrote the brief for the Congressional Black Caucus challenging the Bush election, because Al Gore won that election. It wasn't legitimate here in this country. I'm not saying America's perfect, but I'm saying that all around the globe, sometimes people talk about governments. They say Iran or they say China, and they don't mean the country of Iran. They mean the government of Iran, the government of China. Well, if the government doesn't represent the people, the Syrian government is not Syria. The people of Syria are Syria, and they're the people we need to support, whether it's Senegal, Ethiopia. Again, how we support them, that's a separate question. if you notice, the two cases we just talked about, Senegal and Ethiopia, all the people asked, all Bokar Ba, all Tesfa asked, were for President Obama to take a firm stand in saying these dictators have to go. I think that's fair. That doesn't cost a dime, and it's something the president should do. Let's go on to Star. Star, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling in.
I take exception to your position, which is that the United States government is sometimes going to be intervening for the right reasons. I think that there's just first off, I do want to talk about Libya, but there's a book by Stephen Shalom called Imperialist Alibis. And they, you know, basically he lists all of the reasons that one of the imperialist countries that wants to exploit the resources of undeveloped and non-industrialized countries, they have various pretexts, and human rights is one of the first ones that they'll use as an excuse.
Well, let me ask you this, Star. I agree with you that we often intervene for the wrong reasons. Clearly, we did so in Iraq. I mean,
but
and
we always do. You have to look at what dominates the decision-making process here is the corporate structures. You can't get, you know, that. I mean, we'd have to go into a whole thing on political economy.
Well, let me ask
but
you a fairly
could
clear
I talk
example.
About Libya just
yeah, go ahead. Let's talk about Libya. That's fine.
Okay. Basically, Gaddafi, and we can't really say that the U.S. wanted to go in just for oil, because they actually had contracts with Gaddafi's government, and he was cooperating in recent years with
American oil companies
of the Al-Qaeda, alleged Al-Qaeda prisoners, and so on and so forth. However, we have to look at what happened in Libya in the context of the overall desire on the part of imperialist powers, particularly U.S., to exploit the resources throughout Africa, and the fact that they are in competition with China in doing so. And given Gaddafi's history of being a haven for African political prisoners engaged in national liberation struggles, and his support, you know, for many progressive struggles around the world, the U.S. would not want to have a strong anchor for anti-imperialist work in northern Africa.
But here's my problem, Star.
When there is rising resistance to U.S. policies also.
Here's my problem. If you say that...
I'm sorry, could I just make the point? You said we have to support the people against a dictatorship.
I think we should.
Are we supporting the people? That's the question. Libya had the highest standard of living in Africa. It basically took the West, you know, with these incredible bombing raids by the NATO forces. It took them 9 months to basically vanquish Gaddafi forces. And one of the consequences of that has been an incredible campaign against dark-skinned.
Well, now wait a minute. Now
wait just a second here.
Because hold on. Let's have a discussion here, because this isn't a monologue, and I want to talk with you about this. What happened in Libya? All right, when Gaddafi said that he was going to go into Benghazi and he was going to find people in their closets, and they couldn't hide from them, and he was going to massacre them all. Now, I realize that Gaddafi sometimes did things that were pro-American, sometimes did things that were anti-American. But it cannot be that the only dictators we support are the ones that are anti-American, just like it can't be the only dictators we support are those that are pro-American. I don't think you can deny that people of Benghazi...
Okay, may I answer that?
Yeah.
First of all, look at who was selected out of the dictators in the Middle East that the U.S. has given support to. They went after Libya because of the reasons I suggested, and not after the leadership in Yemen or Bahrain.
I agree with you.
So what I'm getting at, and also all of these, any dictators in the non-industrialized countries, they're getting their weapons from the industrialized West.
Sure.
So
which dictators do you support?
To say that then the imperialist governments are going in there for, you know, good reason.
But Star, which dictators do you support? When do you think it's appropriate for someone to be a dictator?
Like Libya was under where there was huge international pressure, you know, to basically abandon some of the gains of their revolution. They're going to do things that are wrong.
Let me say this. First of all, I don't think it's true that Libya is the richest country. We know that it had the highest GDP per capita, but that per capita wasn't spread. The Libyan people didn't get that oil money. The oil money went to Gaddafi and his friends in Sirte. No, just per capita. That's like saying saying if Bill Gates walks in this room has the highest per capita income of anybody in any room. Gaddafi took the wealth, and he just like, and I'm not saying it's just Gaddafi. Mubarak did it. Assad does it. These dictators in Senegal does. Charles Taylor does it. Some are support America. Some don't. I am arguing for a consistent position, which is that we should oppose dictatorship everywhere. I agree with you on Yemen. I agree with you on Bahrain.
You're the big bourgeoisie that runs this country, and you and I and the vast majority of Americans who delude themselves, you know, and who may have a stake of imperialism, but to delude ourselves that we are really making decisions and that there are fair elections run here, that's insanity.
I said there weren't fair elections around here. I actually wrote the brief challenging the Bush v. Gore election personally. I wrote that by my hand. I'm not saying America's perfect, but I do think this idea that some dictatorships are good, that it's okay if Gaddafi kills 500,000 people in Benghazi.
The distortions in that situation had to do with the imperialist pressures.
What did that have to do
Gaddafi
with Gaddafi's...
To accommodate the U.S. and other imperialist countries in terms of oil contracts and so on and so forth. He was isolated. He came to power at a time of revolution. He became isolated because of, you know, a variety of political factors. And he unfortunately made some accommodations. He's not a perfect guy, and I'm not saying
not a perfect guy. He was a brutal dictator.
I'm saying that having the U.S. go in and promote forces which sometimes, in the case of the Muslim Brotherhood there, had CIA links, and say that this is somehow a people's revolution when all we hear about is what the anti-Qaddafi forces have to say about the situation. I mean, look at the facts. It took them 9 months.
That's right, because people were very afraid.
Of Navy, air, and everything else coming from Europe and the United States.
And did you note how quickly it fell in Tripoli? As soon as the people were not afraid.
It was some sort of huge, widespread.
It absolutely suggests it to me, because as you look, the people on the ground, you had people on the ground fighting a professional army. He put all the money into the army. He hired mercenaries. The Libyans wouldn't fight for him,
Who are you calling the mercenaries? That's the line of that. That's the whole line that has been used, to justify the campaign to kill so many darks and discriminate against, in other ways, so many dark-skinned Libyans.
Well, except that in Darfur, do you support the dictator of Sudan who killed all the black Africans in Darfur? Do you think that's a dictator that's justified because he was anti-American?
The forces in Darfur, in that area actually are not calling for U.S. intervention to save, the people who have suffered in Darfur. And we have to also look at, unfortunately, a preponderance of the forces that are pushing the idea of genocide in Darfur and the need for U.S. intervention are Zionist forces. They're trying to deflect attention.
Are you also opposed to the new country of South Sudan, the southern black Africans in Sudan who've declared their own independent nation, free from the oppression of the northern people in Sudan? Are you against southern Sudan too?
Am I against southern Sudan?
Yes, because that was this. Sudan, we all know, is a country where the Arabs are in the north oppressing the blacks in the south. They're all Muslim. It's not a religious debate. It's an ethnic debate. And debate is the wrong word. Killing, I should say.
Usually is that the people in the south are black, and then the Muslims in the north are oppressing them. I mean, by
you don't believe that happens.
Racism. I mean, everybody is dark and would be terribly discriminated against.
But the point is, hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children were massacred in Darfur.
It's an anti-Muslim thing. The other thing is,
you don't support the genocide in Darfur, do you?
Control, a situation.
You can blame America for everything, but Star, you can't support the genocide that happened in Darfur, do you?
Into much smaller areas.
Do you support the genocide of Darfur? Star, do you support the genocide that happened in Darfur?
No, I don't support
of course
genocide
not.
Any place.
Okay.
I am saying that when the forces themselves that are subject to the attacks from the north are saying we don't want U.S. intervention, we don't want to be used that way, I think that's something to be listened to.
Well, frankly, most... you're listening to some of them, and most of them I know very much wanted the world to intervene, and that's why they asked for support from Darfur. Let me ask you this. In Bosnia, in Kosovo, did you support the United States helping the Muslims there who are being massacred by the Serbians?
It's an entryway into Central Asia. I mean, the geopolitical control.
Would you ever intervene to stop genocide?
US and the imperialist powers, as the oil is.
Star, would you ever intervene to stop genocide? in any case.
I would never have the United States.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your call. We do have other calls, and I want to get to other callers. But, Star, I think that answers my question. If you would never have the United States intervene to stop genocide, then what you're saying is the United States, whatever it does in any context, always does the wrong thing. I disagree. I think sometimes the U.S. does right. Sometimes the U.S. does wrong. Often it acts for the wrong reason. But to me, intervening to stop genocide is one of the clearest examples of protecting human rights. And frankly, I thought in the war in Kosovo, where we stopped the genocide there, what Bill Clinton did, it wasn't for oil. It wasn't for religion. We helped Muslims against the Christian Orthodox of Serbia. It was to protect human rights. Sometimes the U.S. gets it right. But let's hear what Mekanon says. Mekanon, welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
Let me put it easy way for you so you can understand about Africa. Right now, while we're speaking, in Addis, in Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, the capital city, Organization of Africa Unity, the meeting is going on right now. Okay? Now, if whenever you get a chance, just go in there through your internet, and you can see the face of the dictators. Those are the people who are killing their own people. So, it's not going to be hard to understand about African dictators. All of them are killers. There is blood in their hands.
I think, frankly, every dictator on earth has blood on their hands. Because I think that become a dictator, you can't become a dictator without having blood on your hands. I mean, frankly, exactly. There's democracies that have blood on their hands, too. But all the dictatorships do. Whether in Africa or the Middle East or in the Americas, wherever they are. In Europe.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So what I want to add one more thing about the Ethiopian Prime Minister is if you think Gaddafi is terrible or other dictators are terrible, study about him. You're going to be surprised, man. This guy is evil, so he got to go.
Well, I hear you, and I like I said, I oppose all dictators. I suppose all genocide. I don't care whether the person's pro-American or anti-American. We have to stop this, and we have to stand up for it. I think progressives should stand opposed to dictators wherever they are. That doesn't mean we always have to intervene militarily. We can argue about how to fix it. But the idea that we should at least give moral support to people fighting against their dictators, to me, that's an easy question. Let's go to Greg. Greg, welcome to the Raucous Caucus. Hello. Turn down your radio, Greg, so we don't hear the feedback, all right? Go ahead now. No problem.
Oh, am I on?
You're on. You're on the air.
Oh, there he is. I was going to say something that, there's no country that is beyond, being fallible. And when it comes down at the end of the day, God bless America. A lot of foreigners are in this country. This is the only country with more or less is the world in microcosm, because generally the whole world in Europe, in this country, okay. The only country.
You're fading out a bit, Greg. So I'm afraid I'm going to cut you off. It's not because of what you're saying. It's just because your signal is unclear. But let me just say, Garland, Terry, and I are constantly attacking the problems in America. You hear us every week talk about the problems of big money, the problems of corporations, the problem of money in politics, the problem of a corrupt Supreme Court. We talk about that all the time. And it's true. I'm not saying, obviously I agree, because we may disagree on how to fix it, but we agree there's many problems in America. But I think sometimes when you look at the other countries of the world, you fail to recognize some of the good things we have in America. We still, to this day, have some freedom to speak out, not as much as the corporations, I hear you. We still can just think about all these dictators all around the globe where people have to risk their lives to speak out, and we can be thankful for some of the things we do have here. So I understand what you're saying, and I appreciate it. Let's go to Tuma. Tuma, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call.
Absolutely. What country do you want to talk about?
I want to talk mostly about the French-speaking West African or Central African countries.
Okay.
One quick point. I wonder if there has been a thought to make sure that Africans who are already here in the States can have a platform where they can address their problems back home to the Congress. Because most of them are just called like either associated like black or African American, but they don't have a channel. I can say we don't have a channel to table our grievances. you know. To
so no one, problem. No one listens when you go to Congress. They don't care about the problems of French West Africa. It's too.
No, we don't have
the media.
We don't have a platform. I can call it a platform.
Okay.
So, you know, so,
well, that's why I'm doing this show tonight. We don't talk enough about Africa, and I want to hear from Africans and Americans and African Americans. Because
one quick thing. I don't want to waste your time. You know, France has been holding Africans' money, foreign reserve, since 1948.
Really?
For them to use a currency which is controlled exclusively by France, called the CFA franc. Okay, since 1948, these countries have to deposit 85% of their GDP, plus additionally 10% of their GDP to the French treasury.
That's true throughout French West Africa.
Okay, listen carefully.
Yeah.
So they have 5% to run their economies. That's why they are so poor. So generation after generation, they have just been slaves to the French. Now, the French are holding up to $100 trillion. They use this money to invest in the French boss, via Société Générale, Paribas. Those are all African monies. Okay? The Senegalese president asked the French, Sarkozy, to return the billions of African money. One cannot have billions in the bank and go begging. Return our money so we can build roads, build schools, you know, buy medicine, hospitals. We need the money.
Sure.
Or if you don't want, just stop taking our money so we can have a currency. The guy Gaddafi, you know what the French said? The French minister said, no, we can't do that. Because we signed an agreement in the colonial times.
In the colonial times to turn over.
Colonial pact.
See? So there's other imperialism on the planet, French do.
Listen.
Okay, real quick, because...
See,
no,
I haven't got the whole story.
All right,
okay,
I need to get another caller. Go ahead.
They said they signed. Nobody signed the colonial pact. They haven't shown that.
Of course.
Nobody really signed. You understand?
Yeah, I do. It's like how we got Manhattan from the Native Americans.
Nobody signed a colonial pact because the French have military presence there.
Right, of course.
To intimidate the people.
That's what imperialism is.
You don't need to have a military presence in my country, right?
Right. I hear you, and I agree with you, and I thank you for bringing that up.
You're talking what I'm talking. That's not how you get it.
Okay, I only got about 30 seconds, though, because I got to go to my last caller. Go ahead.
Give me your email. I will email something which one American have done, and that is a great genocide. So France is committing genocide in Africa. Every day, about 30,000 people are dying.
You can. I'll tell you what. You can.
What's your email?
You could go to my Facebook, the Mark Levine fan page. My email is mark@marklevine.tv, actually. You can send it there. You can comment on my website on tonight's show. That's marklevinetalk.com, and you can give me all the articles you want, and I'll study them. I promise I will.
You need to read that because the Senate Foreign Relations, Mr. Campbell, he has all those facts.
Okay. No, I'll look it up. I will. And I'm learning. And I'm learning because I don't know those details.
You know,
fair enough. I need to get to one more caller, though. I'm sorry. He's been hanging on. I want to get to every last caller. This is Kwasi. I hope I pronounced your name right. Welcome to the show. Okay.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, thanks for calling.
I have to take exception to a lot of stuff that you're saying.
Okay.
I mean, you talk about America not perfect. America is not even legitimate. I mean, you're talking about a white settler state, just like Israel. And you're talking about dictatorship? This is a dictatorship. Only it's this guy.
Are we as bad as Syria?
It's a hypocrisy.
Well, listen, I'm not saying... I think America's got lots of problems. We talk about it all the time. But what I want to know is people aren't being killed in the streets that often here.
And I think
that's good.
They're not being killed in the streets. You're just not seeing it. People are being killed in the streets.
People
all
are being killed in the drug wars,
country,
certainly.
Due to economic policies, due to social policies, due to police violence.
Oh, absolutely. And we've talked about that. And we've talked about that on the Raucous Caucus, and we continue to talk about that.
I mean, just because they disguise the way they commit genocide, don't say that they're not.
America did commit genocide. We committed genocide with Native Americans. We certainly had slavery.
Yes.
But do you think we're committing genocide today in America?
Yes. Go to a so-called reservation and ask those people if they did.
Well, I told you we committed genocide on the Native Americans, but in the 19th century. There's no question we did that. I don't think we're going out and killing them today. Not genocide. You can argue that we're mistreating Native Americans. But I don't think that word should be thrown around.
That's what you call it. That's a polite way of saying we're killing them kindly.
Well, I don't think we're going out and shooting kids.
You're not shooting them. You're starving them.
Well, There is too much hunger and starvation in America. I agree with you.
If you hold a gun on a man and starving to death, how is that any different from shooting him?
I think that's a little exaggerated. I think it's a little exaggerated. Kwasi, I'm afraid that's the end of the hour, but I appreciate you calling in. Listen, y'all took me to task. That's fair. That's part of what we do in the Raucous Caucus. We take ourselves to task, and it's okay for you to take me to task. You don't have to agree with me. As I said, if you want to keep this discussion going, you can go to my website, marklivingtalk.com. You can come at me on Facebook, and you can come at me next week. Just come visit me at Hyattsville, Maryland. My focus is this. Look, we do focus on all the problems in America. I am not disputing the many problems in America. We talked about corporate money and money in politics and corruption and racism and poverty and all the problems in America. But at some point, I think when we look outside and we see the plight of people in Africa, of people in Senegal, of people in Syria, of people in Iran, of people in Libya or Sudan or Russia, for that matter, North Korea, we see that there are places worse than us. And that doesn't mean that I approve of things going on in America. But at the same time, immigrants sometimes recognize how good America is because of the countries they've come from. So at the same time as we work to make this a more perfect union, at the same time as we work to make America a better place, at the same time as we focus on all the problems in America, I think we have to recognize what goes on all the way around the world. Because in Syria, people are fighting just to have a say in their government. And wherever it is, I want to be on the side of democracy. Not always a military way, but at least I want the president to speak out and support democracy wherever it is around the globe. So to the people of Senegal, to the people of Ethiopia, I say I agree with you. Let's get President Obama.